Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The city of Charlotte has three top priorities: mobility, housing, and safety. And efforts toward those ends usually begin in committees, and there are four major committees that help council govern the city: budget, governance, and intergovernmental relations, transportation, planning, and development, jobs and economic development, and housing, safety, and community. Today, we sit down with the chairs of three of those committees. Dimple Ajmera is chair of the Budget Committee. Malcolm Graham chairs the Jobs and Economic Development Committee. And Ed Driggs runs Transportation, Planning, and Development. And we're going to talk about the priorities they've set for those committees, why they've set them, and get a progress report on where they are on all of that. Welcome to all three of you. Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Morning. Thank you for having us.
Morning.
You're very welcome. Ed, I'm going to start with you because a year ago when we were on this program doing something similar to this, I started with you then because we had to talk about your responsibilities as chair of the Transportation Planning and Development Committee because of troubles at the time with cats. But I have to begin with you this time because of the challenges the city is facing and the realities that are setting in with regard to the mandates surrounding the UDO and the 2040 plan, the UDO being the Unified Development Ordinances. The realities of that are beginning to dawn on people, evidently, and the 2040 plan passed, and the UDO both passed on very close votes on a previous council. Was it, as your colleague Tariq Bukhari put it, and I'm paraphrasing here, perhaps ill-advised to make such an important decision on a one-vote margin?
I said at the time that I would have preferred to have a larger majority on such a change of direction for the city. But nonetheless, it is the adopted policy of council. It was a very ambitious plan, far reaching. And we knew that when we implemented it, there was going to be a need to kind of fine tune it as we got some experience with the rules.
You knew it. Do you think the public knew it? Because this is the recent upheaval, that's an awfully strong word. The recent uncomfortableness with this seems to have come as a surprise to a lot of folks.
I don't think the public was paying a lot of attention to the details of our conversation. I tried to talk to my constituents about it. There wasn't that much awareness or interest. And then when it started to land in neighborhoods and in zoning decisions, people suddenly became alert and said, what? That's what that says?
So the sticky wicket here with regard to the UDO seems to center around the allowing of triplexes and duplexes in what have been heretofore single-family neighborhoods. And now that at least one or two of them have been built, people are going, whoa, I'm not sure I like that. And correct me if I'm wrong, city planners have come before council and said, we would like to restrict triplexes to corner lots, because that helps with parking, it helps with egress and entrance into those driveways, et cetera, because there are multiple people living in those units. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, you're actually considering doing that or have already done it. Does that indicate that the UDO may be sliced and diced and receive death by a thousand cuts over time?
It was very controversial when we first adopted it that in 2.1, we eliminated zoning for single family only, right? So our lowest density housing type was a mix. What has transpired in part is that people are not observing the mix that we intended. So the lowest density housing type, residential housing type, is supposed to have single family homes, duplexes, and triplexes. We got petitions coming in that were loaded with the duplexes and the triplexes. So in part, what has happened that you're alluding to is the staff came and proposed a text amendment to restrict the triplexes in order to achieve more of what was intended in the first place in the UDO. And at the same time, because of a couple of petitions we've received, which engendered protests from the public, we are also examining whether that whole N1 place type, the low density residential place type, should be redefined a little bit. But I don't think it's death by a thousand cuts. I think it's a living document, and we are simply adapting to what we're learning from experience.
So for a lot of people move in here and they have no idea what we're talking about because they weren't here when this was discussed, and it took a while for this to come to be. And it is the product of a previous planning director, Taiwo Jayoba, who is no longer with us, a previous city council, that is the makeup of which has changed over time. So remind us why that council and that planning director thought that this was a good idea and why, in fact, it's necessary.
The growth of the city has caused housing prices to go up quickly, right? And in response to that, in an effort to keep the cost down, we liberalized land use to create more housing. So supply and demand just said, liberalize the creation of housing, that will slow down the rise in prices. That was it. I believe our former planning director also had a social agenda, frankly, and that influenced his concept for this thing. I think that was one of the things that some of us pushed back against. We wanted to be more sensitive to problems like insufficient infrastructure and existing neighborhoods and the communities that we had before. But it was that mix of events.
Ed Driggs is the chair of that committee that deals with that. But Malcolm Graham, you are on that committee. You are a member of that committee. And you said a few weeks ago that you would likely support these proposed changes, but you were, in fact, concerned about making changes to this plan so quickly. Explain those two stances seem to be in opposition with each other. So explain
Yeah,
that.
and I need a lot more information as we kind of delve into it. You know, the 2040 plan is about how do we prepare for the future for our community, the UDOs, the rules and the regulations that we have to follow to get there. And our city, as Ed said, is growing significantly, leaps and bounds. We have to make housing affordable, jobs attainable, and have the ability, the people to get back and forth. There will probably transportation, et cetera. And I disagree with Ed. I don't think there was a social agenda there. I think it was really how do we prepare and plan our city for the future? How do we make sure that as 112, 13 people move to Charlotte every day, they have the ability to identify affordable housing, that we keep our community affordable, that we have the ability to house people in a wide variety of housing situations. And so I'm really concerned that we are backtracking. I was in the majority of that 6-5 majority that supported the UDO. I believe that it's about planning for our future, as I said. And you know, obviously, I'm willing to make minor change and modifications as we learn along the way. But we're getting really, really close to cutting the bones, the heart, the meat of the intentions of the UDO. We're not providing the type of certainty I believe that developers and neighborhood leaders need to know. And again, this thing is change, and change can be painful at times. But I think as we prepare for 2040, 2050, that we have to, as a council, be willing to work through the change. And so I said what I said. I'm not sure I'm going to vote that way. As I learn more and talk to a lot more developers, neighborhood associations, and my own personal belief in terms of how our city should grow as we move forward, how do I want to leave this place for my grandson, right? In terms of how he should be living, in terms of place types and housing situations.
So you're on two committees, Malcolm, that deal with development. You're on the Transportation Planning and Development Committee. You're also the chair of the Jobs and Economic Development Committee. And Ed Driggs just said that when the UDO came out and said you can put triplexes in single-family home neighborhoods, that suddenly you were flooded with applications for permits to do exactly that. If you change the rules now, what, if any, impact is there to economic development? And it's a kind of a common, it may not be true, but it's a common perception in Charlotte that if developers want something, they're going to get it.
Well, I think, as I said earlier, I think we owe the community, not just the development community, but our neighborhood associations and our constituents, certainty as much as we can provide through the planning process. a number of organizations, whether they're nonprofit organizations like Habitat for Humanity or major developers, are looking at what we're doing, trying to play by the rules of the games. And if we change the rules midstream significantly, then it does impact economic development. It does impact the planning process and how people will be willing to invest in our community. And so that's why I think we ought to proceed with caution. I'm not there yet, but again, the planning process is about future planning for our community and providing the certainty that developers and residents know that they know what the rules of the games are.
Dimple, I want to bring you into this because although you're not on either of these committees, you are a member of City Council, and City Council voted in favor. Were you on the committee of the were you on the council when they voted the UDO in?
Yes, Mike,
You
I
were. Okay,
was. And I was
so
in
let
the
me ask so let me
majority.
so let okay so let me ask you this. A lot of the reservations that we are now hearing from residents about what this is doing to the character of their neighborhoods when we allow these triplexes in were the same things that we heard in advance of the UDO being voted in. And now it appears that some members, at least of city staff, are listening. What's changed, and or why weren't they listened to before?
So it's not that they weren't listened to before. Some of these concerns that we are hearing now, the intent was to create more housing stock, in return that would decrease the housing prices. That was the intent behind it, right? But you can see some of the petitions we have seen. It's where it really takes open space and green space away. So if you take a look at triplex example, you're building three driveways, and there are very creative development we have seen where they are using sort of not quality green space, and that was not the intent. The intent was to have more quality green space that residents can use. So as we are seeing some of these unintended consequences, this is a living and breathing document that we had to make changes as a result of that. And that was clear from the beginning that when we see something that is not based on the intent of the UDO and the 2040 plan, we will make changes.
Not everybody has the vision to see what is not yet there. That is why they use interior decorators for their homes. So, Ed, there were some people who were concerned about these triplexes going up in these single-family neighborhoods. And now that they are happening, they are seeing how they fit into those neighborhoods. And I've been into a few of them. And you've got this, I don't know, 1,800 square foot ranch house next to this enormous building, which is a triplex. Is that what was intended? Did the city planners see that and think that was a good idea? Is it a good idea?
I don't think they fully visualized what was going to be, how it was going to look or how it's going to happen. And that's why I say I think the plan was put in place with certain goals in mind. And then the consequences of that or some of the repercussions were not appreciated. And that's what we're dealing with now. And by the way, Mike, I wanted to push back a little bit on your comment. The developer community doesn't feel that they have the kind of control that you suggested the public thinks they has. And if you look at the makeup of this council, it's not overly friendly to them.
Right. Well, I just said that it may not be true, but that is the perception on the part of many that if developers want, and I'm sure they always want more than they get. So,
They do.
okay. When we come back, I want to talk about the budget sessions because Dimple, your committee and council have been listening to what people think the city should be doing with the tax money that they give the city every year. I want to find out what you heard in those budget sessions. And also talk a little bit about the prospect of a property tax increase coming our way. Whether or not that will happen, we'll talk about that. Dimple Ajmera is here. She's an at-large member of Charlotte City Council, chair of the Budget, Governance, and Intergovernmental Relations Committee. Malcolm Graham represents District 2. He's the chair of the Jobs and Economic Development Committee. And Ed Driggs is with District 7. He's the councilman from District 7 and chair of the Transportation Planning and Development Committee. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking with the chairs of three of the four major committees on Charlotte City Council, Dimple Lajmera, Malcolm Graham, Ed Driggs. Victoria Watlington, who chairs the Housing, Safety, and Community Committee, was invited to be with us, but she couldn't make it. But Dimple, we're going to talk about your committee that has been talking to citizens about budget priorities, asking them how they think their tax dollars should be spent by the city. You set up some listening sessions several months ago, and you said before that started that you thought that the priorities would center on affordable housing and public safety. Did that prove to be the case? What did you hear?
Absolutely. Public safety, affordable housing, and what we often hear is infrastructure. Every single budget listening session that I have been to, I always hear sidewalks at least two times in every budget listening session. And we are very protective of our taxpayers' burden. We are one of the largest cities in the state, where other cities across the state and nations have raised their property tax. We have not had any property tax increase in last 5 years. And that speaks volume to our financial leadership, where we have been able to absorb the inflationary cost and a rise in our capital projects. And that's tremendous. But we are at an inflection point, Mike, where we have to make very responsible decisions around our infrastructure, specifically sidewalks, and other important issues. So at this point, all options are at the table. We will hear our proposed manager's budget on May 6th, and council will have opportunity to provide their feedback, and council will ultimately adopt the budget in June.
I want to come back to the tax, to the potential of a tax increase in a minute or two. Ed, go ahead. Unmute yourself, Ed.
So I just wanted to add, the revaluation had the effect of shifting a lot of the burden of property taxes to residential owners as opposed to commercial. So even though we had a revenue neutral reset, which means the city didn't get more property tax proceeds than they would have without the revaluation, residential owners saw increases. So 70% of owners of residences saw their tax bills go up. So now we're having to think about our budget priorities in the context of that increase that people already experienced in their tax bills, which didn't yield more money to us.
And that's because, to remind folks, during the pandemic, people started working from home and real estate values uptown kind of fell because there are lots of vacant office buildings, et cetera. Is that what's going on there? Is that why the burden moved to residences?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Part of it is. But then also the city makes 36% of the property tax bill. Other portion is county's portion. So certainly county has had property tax increases to fund school bond. But so when you look at the property tax bill, right, you're looking at it from the holistic perspective, not just the city's portion. So yes, even though city did not raise property tax, you might have seen an increase because of the other 74%, and also because now there is greater portion that's being paid by residential versus commercial.
So Dimple, you are also a member of Victoria Watlington's committee, the one that she chairs, the Housing, Safety, and Community Committee, and public safety falls under that umbrella. We have experienced youth violence, an increase, an uptick in youth violence, and particularly gun violence. As have most American cities in recent years. Is Charlotte putting enough money toward public safety, or is money really the problem?
I will say, Mike, that we are doing everything that we can. We have invested millions of dollars in addressing public safety. But the question we have to ask, is this really something that CMPD can alone solve this? We also have to look at our faith community, our nonprofit, our family makeup, and all of that plays a role into overall safety of our community. We have Alternative to Violence program, which has shown promising success in Beatty's Ford corridor. We are expanding in other parts of our city, especially in corridors of opportunities. And we also have other programs with CMPD, Youth Diversion Program, that has a very high success rate. So certainly we are doing everything that we can from prevention perspective, as well addressing crime that CMPD has been fighting crime. But really, this is a community problem, and it's going to take all of us together to address it.
And Malcolm, it's a multifaceted problem, as you well know. And as the chair of the Jobs and Economic Development Committee, there's an impact of rising crime rates on both of those things. Maybe jobs, a lack of jobs in some cases, causes it or is one of the causes. And a rising crime rate can lead to a lack of economic development. How do you see this problem? Is it a money problem, or do we need to put different kinds of resources in place, and have we done so?
No, I think Dimple was spot on in terms of the collaboration that is needed throughout the community. Our churches, our nonprofit organizations, certainly government plays a role in reference to establishing a robust workforce development program to and training programs, apprenticeship programs, making sure that people have access to jobs, which leads to a diversion of crime. People believe that they can take care of themselves and their families. But it's really just coming together as one community, acknowledging our humanity with one another, and acknowledging that we have to not get tough on crime, but certainly enforce the laws that are on the books, protect visitors who are coming to our city. Obviously, uptown Charlotte, which I represent, has had its fair share of crime-related activities, notwithstanding the fact that crime in uptown is down 7%, the perception of crime and the uptown area being unsafe is problematic. So I think it takes all of us, county, city, corporate leaders, nonprofit organizations, churches, working together for the common good.
And both you and Dimple are Democrats, and the president, President Biden, has made a great deal of He's made a great deal of the fact that the economy, by all of the normal indicators, is gangbusters. And yet there is this perception on the part of a lot of people that it's not. It's not for them. When it comes to jobs, because the unemployment rate is so low and the employment rate is so high, are people who need jobs in the community finding them?
You know, we're making every effort to meet people where they are, not just having people go to a portal and fill out an application, but through the Quarters of Opportunity program, we identified selected nonprofit organizations throughout the city where individuals who are looking for employment opportunities can go and physically hand someone a resume, working with a wide variety of corporations in the community to identify job opportunities, really focusing on second chance opportunities for those who have been criminally incarcerated, the opportunity to find gainful employment. And so we're working as hard as we can as a community with other stakeholders, especially through our workforce development program, working with also our small business owners who hire more people than many of the major corporations combined in our community to identify opportunities. The jobs are there. We just have to make sure that we provide a pipeline, a portal for ways to identify how they can tap into them.
Dimple and Ed both want to chime in on this. I think, Dimple, you had your hand up first.
Go ahead. Yes, so Malcolm is correct. In addition to employment, our Housing and Safety Committee, youth violence is a top priority. And we are looking at other programs that provide opportunities for after school programs, as well as summer programs to keep our youth busy. Whether that's partnership with the YMCA, or whether that's arts and crafts projects and so on. So certainly I think, in addition to job and employment, we got to ensure that there are ample opportunities for our youth, because every child deserves a safe and thriving environment when parent is working two or three jobs outside.
Ed?
I just wanted to note a lot of the dissatisfaction about the economy has to do with inflation. So people are working, but their incomes are buying less and less, and the disparity in terms of affordability of housing is getting wider.
So there's that problem. And let me ask you this, but because you're the chair of the Jobs and Economic Development Committee, Malcolm, are the jobs that are available or becoming available in this low unemployment, high employment environment paying a living wage?
Well, that's the rub, right? And I think Ed makes a credible point about inflation. And so, working with major corporations and others in the community about the pay scale that individuals are making, obviously, it's a three-legged stool. You need a job to obtain an affordable housing. We have to make sure that we provide the type of transportation options, public transportation for those who need it, and so it's a troubling scenario that we're trying to resolve. But I think getting employers to understand, certainly the city has done its fair share in terms of increasing our minimum wage and encouraging other corporations to do the same.
And he just mentioned housing, Dimple, and you're on that committee, that Housing Safety and Community Committee. It's one of the city's top priorities, affordable housing, and a lot of emphasis has been placed in recent years on increasing the amount of affordable housing, although it's an uphill battle to say the least. It's like Atlas rolling the globe up the hill. City staffers have now recommended five projects that would bring in 259 units online, and five of them would have homeownership opportunities. But there's only about $8.9 million left of voter-approved money. Is that figure correct? 8.9 million?
That sounds about right.
So, does that money come from the $50 million bond package that we keep saying yes to every couple of years?
That's correct. That will be
When,
part of the housing bond referendum.
so, when does the next bond referendum come up for a vote? Because if you only got less than $10 million of the $50 million we said yes to, how long can that last?
So, next bond referendum will be part of this budget that we will approve.
Okay. Charlotte, we have to talk about this because this has been in the news all the last 2 weeks. Charlotte collects hospitality taxes on people who eat or drink in restaurants and bars, stay in hotel rooms, buy prepared meals from grocery stores, etc. That money, because it comes from hospitality-associated activities, is earmarked for projects that benefit tourism. Here it supports the Convention Center, renovations to Bank of America Stadium and the Spectrum Arena. It supports the NASCAR Hall of Fame and other projects. But at a recent council meeting, as you three know well, other needs were spoken about. Councilwoman Renee Johnson proposed using some of this money for our transit plan and for other infrastructure projects. Very much like the city of Asheville does with their tourist tax dollars. Ed, you said at the time it was a conversation worth having. And Malcolm, you said, and I quote, "With all due respect to Asheville, Asheville ain't Charlotte." And you added, "This is a terrible idea." So let me start with you. Why is it a terrible idea?
Well, it creates more problem than it solves, right? It creates problem at home with the local Hospitality Tourism Association, who has been a credible partner working with the city of Charlotte to get these taxes passed. Just recently, last session, we extended the 1% meals tax that was set to expire in 2031 and to 2060. Their help got us there. It creates problem with the General Assembly, who we have to continue to build trust with in terms of how these dollars will be utilized. That was part of the process when we went to Raleigh last year. This is how we're going to use the funds. So it creates problem there. It creates problem in New York with our bond agencies. Not to say that we're going to sacrifice our AAA bond rating, but they certainly will be asking questions about what is Charlotte doing. This is significantly different than we've done before. There's not an unlimited capacity there. We just generated or spent $274 million for the Spectrum Arena, $2 million for the Carolina Theaters, just renovated the Convention Center, Who knows what we're going to do with Bank of America Stadium? We have to also plan for the unknown, like when BMOC came and there was an opportunity there to invest in tourism and hospitality. I get it that we need to have a focus on infrastructure. I'm not sure that's the way to do it. There's legal complications, as you guys talked about, in terms of another city being sued for using their hospitality taxes for public safety in the eastern part of the state. And so it just creates a lot more problem than it really solves. I believe that we have to be focused on the half-cent sales tax, which we need to get Raleigh to approve. And I'm cautiously optimistic that we may be make some progress with that in the short session this year. Trying to get that federal match. So the national election is going to be really important in November. And I think we just, as a council, needs to exercise the same fiscal discipline that Mayor Gantt and Vinroot and McCrory and other city managers have done year after year after year, that has gotten Charlotte in a position where we have a AAA bond rating, that there's some dependability in terms of how our dollars will be used. Ed, as well as Dimple, two former chairmen of the budget committee, has done an excellent job in ensuring that we're fiscally responsible for every dollar, whether it's the dollars in the general fund, whether it's things that are being happening at the airport for what's happening over there, which we have no control over, and how those dollars are being spent. Certainly also the tourism taxes. So I just think we have to think broad and wide, and as a council, play chess and not checkers.
And I know, Ed, that you want to talk about this, but I want to come back to the comment that you made when this first came up. You said it was an idea or a conversation worth having. Some things have transpired in the interim. Do you still feel that way?
I wanted to clarify. I said that as a courtesy to my colleague. If you listened to the rest of the meeting, I went on to list 10 reasons why I entirely agree with Mr. Graham. It is not something we want to do. State law doesn't allow it. We don't want to get into a conversation with legislators about trying to get them to allow it. And the circumstances in Asheville have been misrepresented anyway, in terms of the comparability. But Charlotte is just a very different place. We have huge needs in that hospitality arena that are being met from those taxes, and it's just fine the way it is.
So I know, Dimple, you're moving back and forth, so I know that you want to talk about this. And we've alluded to Currituck County, which is down east, and they have taken money from their occupancy tax to fund public safety. And I suppose it could be argued that having public safety would help tourism, particularly in a beach community where fire and flooding and things like that happen. When we come back to the break, from the break, I want to talk to you about that because Currituck County has been sued. And now I think they're on the hook for replenishing their pot of money from tourism to the tune of $14 million. So I want to know if that should give us pause before we leap into this, doing something similar to what they did and what Asheville is doing right now. We have to break. We'll come back with more in a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE. We're talking with three of the leaders of three of the key committees on Charlotte City Council. Dimple Ajmera chairs the Budget, Governance, and Intergovernmental Relations Committee and is on the Housing, Safety, and Community Committee. Malcolm Graham from District 2 chairs the Jobs and Economic Development Committee. And Ed Driggs is on that committee, but he also chairs the District 7, the Transportation Planning and Development Committee, of which Malcolm is also a member. It's very confusing. So, Dimple, let's talk about this Currituck County situation, because they did use their tourism taxes for something other than tourism, for public safety, and now they've been sued successfully, and they have to pay back $14 million. The city of Asheville is, the mayor there is an attorney who says that the wording of the law, which says you got to use tourism money for tourism, direct tourism purposes, is open to interpretation. And they made the argument they're spending some of their money, or trying to, on affordable housing And they made the argument that housing for the for tourist workers, the waiters and waitresses and the people who change the bed linens and things like that, is a benefit to tourism, because if they have to, if they can't live close to their work, it's sometimes economically not feasible for them to do that work. And they also, I think, have used it for other purposes like greenways. But the fact that Carrituck County has been sued, does that give you pause?
Absolutely. In fact, when we had our strategy session where we were giving report outs from each committee, I raised that. I said, look, there has been a legal challenge, and we have to be very careful. We have a responsibility to use public dollars very wisely. We should be very careful in the decisions we make. It may sound really well, yeah, let's use this pot of money, but what are the legal challenges, right? Malcolm, who is the committee chair, he nailed it from the beginning. We need to be laser focused on our half-cent sales tax, because that is going to help us in the long run. That is certainly a sustainable source of revenue. That's
and
going
the half-cent sales
us.
Tax comes from is for what purpose?
That is for infrastructure. That is for light rail, sidewalks, bike lanes, greenways, all of the above.
We're asking for that. We don't have it yet.
We don't have it yet. But
so we don't want to jeopardize our relationship with Raleigh, which is already tenuous, by going against them with the tourism thing.
Absolutely.
Ed, I know you want to talk about this, but I do want to cover this before we move on, and that is the fact that since this became a topic on council, Vinay Patel, who chairs the Charlotte Regional Visitors Authority, said if council tries to change the way these tax dollars are spent, he would be the first one in Raleigh to try to have that tax repealed. And Lynn Mingus, I think that's how you say their name, of the State Restaurant and Lodging Association warned you not to go down that path, suggesting the city would be sued, which is what happened in Carrituck County. And now the mayor has written a letter that says the city does not intend to change how it spends money from tourism taxes. So did you anticipate that this was going to become the brouhaha that it has become? And why? Why do people in the restaurant and the tourism industry care where the money goes as long as they get some of it? It's not hurting them.
It is hurting them, Mike.
How?
It's a cost related to their business. The whole thing is a business transaction. The hospitality industry agrees to carry the burden of that tax so that it can invest and promote future tourism.
Why is that a burden? Why is that a burden? If you come to town and stay in a hotel and you're paying 2% tax on your hotel bill because that's what we have, we tax it, how is that a burden to the hotel?
It's a burden to the hotel because in the competitive environment between us and other cities, it affects the cost structure.
Okay.
So you impose a tax on anybody, their competitiveness is affected. And again, they have agreed to carry the burden of that cost in order to pay for future tourism.
And Dimple, this is a tax that impacts both visitors to our city and locals, because when we eat out, we are paying that tax. When we buy a drink at the bar, we are paying that tax. When we buy a prepared sandwich at Harris Teeter, we are paying that tax. Have you heard from any locals about where they think that money collected from those taxes should go?
So there is actually occupancy tax that's only paid by tourists, right? And then we have meals tax that's paid by local and tourism. And Mecklenburg is one of the highest when it comes to occupancy tax. So if you're a visitor that's looking at the total amount, not just what's the rent is or what the rent rate is for that night, you're looking at versus, hey, if I go to Rock Hill, I would save $20 or $30 a night versus going to Charlotte, right? I mean, that's the kind of total cost structure you're looking at. And so hospitality industry has been telling us that, hey, we have to lower our rate so that our total would be same as our competition down the road, right?
Okay.
So I think that's what the hospitality sector is worried about, that we have imposed this tax on us by lowering our revenue. And now you're using that money to not for tourism, but for other needs, whether it's infrastructure or whatever it may be that you're proposing. that's not supported by other industries, that's supported only by our industry, and that's where they have a challenge.
I'm going to give Malcolm the last word on this. Go ahead.
Yeah, and you should also know that we did not extend the 2% hotel occupancy tax, right? And the same folks, the HTA and the folks in Raleigh, we're going to need their support for that. That tax expires in 2038. I would think that we would want to extend that as well. And so, like I said from the very beginning, just because you can do something don't mean that you should. And it creates more problem than it solves.
So this is one area where Charlotte intersects with Raleigh, because Raleigh has to get involved if we do something like this, or they will if we do it without their permission. And the other area where we have to get involved with Raleigh, Dimple and Ed, is with transit. Senate Leader Phil Berger says he does not like our transit plan because it focuses too much on things other than roads, which he says is what most people use. But even before he said that this spring, or I guess it was early in the winter, this plan seems to have been stuck for years now in neutral. To the best of your knowledge, how many discussions has the City of Charlotte or the Metropolitan Transit Commission, of which you are a member, Ed, had with lawmakers in Raleigh about this plan or ways to secure funding for it?
So I'm not personally a member of the MTC. The MTC is made up of the mayors of all of the towns of Charlotte and a member of the Board of County Commissioners. There have been numerous conversations, including myself, talking with leaders in the legislature about the need to invest in mobility in Charlotte and the region. That's the key point. We have had reactions from the speaker and pro tem to the effect that the plan they heard about earlier, which included 80% or more of the funding for rail, was in their minds not the right balance. We have revisited that. We're now talking to them about a flexibility in terms of how we allocate and putting more of the money into roads. So there is a dialogue going on. The key obstacle is that the northern towns were disappointed about how the half-cent sales tax that was imposed in 1998 played out. They didn't get the red line that they expected. So we have had to work to solve the red line problem and establish some sort of consensus among the towns in Mecklenburg County before the legislature would consider a sales tax referendum.
But Dimple, you're in charge of the Intergovernmental Relations Committee. And when we're talking about getting buy-in from the northern towns for this, that's part of intergovernmental relations. And when we talk about getting buy-in for funding from Raleigh, that is part of that as well. And every time I've asked anybody associated with the city about this, how many conversations have we had with Raleigh over time? The answer is very blurry. Can you give me an answer?
Yes, I'll say that really at this point, our business community is leading the conversation, and for right reasons. It takes the politics out of it, and it keeps the focus on the issue. And we are very grateful to have very strong business community who is leading this conversation. And having while being said that, as a city, we have made progress on red line, and that wasn't there before. There are some concerns that Northern Town has about the red line where promises were not fulfilled, and those concerns need to be addressed. So showing this progress that is being made on red line will certainly help repair the relationships with northern towns.
But Malcolm, I know you want to chime in on this. We've been talking about this transit plan now for years. We know that we have to have buy-in from Raleigh to get that half-cent sales tax to support the plan, or some of the funding for the plan. That won't cover it all. We also know, and you're a Democrat, we know that we have probably the most train and transit-friendly administration in place in Washington that we will ever have, period. Joe Biden loves the train. But his time in office may be limited. So the clock is ticking, it seems to me, on all of this. Why is there no sense of urgency? If we really need this, and apparently everybody thinks we do, why isn't there more of a sense of urgency about this?
Because it's complicated. Government is complicated. Relationships are complicated. I think we're getting to a point where We are getting there. Our relationship with Raleigh, people talk about how bad it is, but for the last year or two, we've really been able to work with them. It's a slow dance in terms of getting the things that we need for the city of Charlotte. Those conversations are happening from a corporate level. I know the mayor and Ed has been involved in numerous conversations. Ed's being a little bashful this morning, trying to make sure that we could again get this half-cent sales tax, hopefully on the ballot in 2025, passed this year by the General Assembly in the short session. That would be unusual. I'm consciously optimistic that it can occur. I think we're moving, and then we'll see what happens with the national election in November, and hopefully something on the ballot in 2025 that would get the match that we need from the federal government, not only for transit, but for roads and other type of infrastructure needs for our community. So slow progress.
I want to point out for those who don't know, Malcolm knows what he's talking about when it comes to Raleigh because he was a member of the legislature. Ed, did you want to say something here?
Mike, I hate to be the one to point this out as the Republican on the city council, but in fact, the conversation about a sales tax is a penny, not a half cent.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for that. I get confused about that because I keep calling it a 1% tax. It's not, it's a penny. And then I call it a half cent tax. It's not, it's a penny. Okay. I want to get to taxes again. And that is because you told several months ago, Dimple, you told Joe Bruno from WSOC TV that the city, and you mentioned it this morning, hasn't had a property tax increase in 5 years. And you said that when other cities and towns across the state and the nation raised taxes because of inflation, we did not. You also told him that the city had absorbed these increased costs that are associated with rising retirement costs for employees and rising health insurance costs for those employees by being efficient with money. But there have been rumors of a property tax increase on the horizon. Is it inevitable?
Well, all options are at the table. I'm not sure what manager will propose on May 6th. But let me tell you, we are at an inflection point. Even though we haven't had taxes, property tax increase in last 5 years, I don't know if it's avoidable this year, to tell you the truth, because we have to invest in our infrastructure. We have to invest in our sidewalks. So we got major infrastructure needs we have a long list of infrastructure needs that needs to be fulfilled.
Given the impact that inflation has had on average people who are angry about this, and probably rightfully so, and I don't think it's the government's fault that prices have gone up, it's just they've gone up, and it's difficult for the government to get a handle on that. But is it wise politically, is it wise ethically or morally to raise property taxes in an inflationary environment?
Well, I will say this. It is not wise to raise burden of property tax on our residents, but at the same time, are we creating a bigger problem in future, right? Are we kicking the can down the road? Are we not fulfilling our basic obligations of investing on infrastructure? Are we not fulfilling our public safety obligations of building new fire stations, ensuring that we have a quick response time? So we have far greater responsibility to balance it all.
Just as a side note, next month on May 8th, Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles will be here with the city manager, Marcus Jones, to talk about the budget. And we will get into a conversation about the possibility of a tax increase with them as well. We only have a couple of minutes left. So very quickly, the Hornets practice facility came up in the news recently because the Hornets decided they want to build their own standalone facility where the city had budgeted, I think it was $275 million for an overall move of the practice facility to the top of an office tower they want to build next to the bus station. Now they don't have to do that because the Hornets are going to do it themselves. But the $275 million is still in place. Why?
The $275 million was actually a result of a commitment that we had made to the team earlier to maintain the Spectrum Arena at a certain level. So $170 million of that would go into the arena anyway, We then agreed to further improvements at the arena in order to get the team to stay here for another 15 years. And $60 million was designated to be for the practice facility. That was in 2022. What we just did this year was we reapportioned some of that. We moved another $30 million out of the practice facility into further arena improvements. We committed $30 million, the remaining $30 million, to a practice facility with it. It would now be owned by the team, and the majority of the cost of which would be borne by the team.
Dimple, I have 30 seconds. Council recently voted to recriminalize 8 city ordinances involving public behavior, among them public urination. And at the time, the city council said they knew there was a deficient number of public restroom facilities in uptown Charlotte, and they were going to begin construction of some. Has that started quickly?
Yes, that has been started. In fact, we have 2 mobile restrooms. We are partnering with nonprofits to have this truck that will be moving around uptown, and there will be more to come.
Dimple Ajmera chairs the Budget Governance Intergovernmental Relations Committee, Malcolm Graham, the Jobs and Economic Development Committee, Ed Driggs, the Transportation Planning and Development Committee.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.